Welcome to The Last American Vagabond. I am honored to be joined today by Alex and Alex from the Duran to talk about their censorship from PayPal. It's exactly what you all have seen T-Lab going through and a lot of other people. And so I wanted to have them on today for the first interview we've had together, which is I'm honored to have them on because they do absolutely fantastic work, and talk about what they're seeing in the world of censorship and what happened with them in regard to PayPal and then wherever else we decide to get into. So again, great to have you both on. How are you today?
Well, it's great to be on the show, and I'm feeling fantastic and absolutely delighted to be here. And thank you very much for hosting us.
My pleasure. It's great to be here. Thank you very much for hosting us. We are fans of your work, and it's very surreal to be out here with you.
Awesome. And vice versa. It's great to meet, because I think we have a lot of crossover in our audiences in general. So I think it's important. And I really do respect the type of show you do, very detail oriented and facts. I mean, that's what it should be about today. So thank you for being here. So obviously PayPal has been going after, in my opinion, anybody out there that is ultimately trying to challenge the narrative, whether it's fact-based or not, peer-reviewed science or not. And so for those out there that don't know, The Last American Vagabond was recently banned off PayPal. Money was seized. The whole process went down, and it's just unreal. It's criminal. I mean, the analogy I used to start it off is about like a bank. If a bank called you that you've worked with for years and said, hey, we there's something going on. We can't tell you what it is. We're going to seize all your funds for 3 months, and maybe you'll get some back, whether we decide to or not. And we won't even tell you what's going on until we get to there. That's criminal. Like, there's no way that wouldn't be seen as criminal, but yet PayPal has been doing it to a lot of people today. And apparently some censorship has happened with you guys. So whoever wants to get started, why don't you walk us through what happened in regard to PayPal and any other censorship that you've had up until then?
Well, I mean, we've all, every one of us who's worked on social media, who's trying to run into independent channels, knows that it's become increasingly difficult. We've had all kinds of warnings and things, and it's become an absolutely exhausting thing to use careful language, try to say things which, you know, aren't going to trigger any problems, but at the same time get our meaning across. But then we were doing that. We were trying to stick to all the rules, and out of nowhere on the Friday, and I gather this tends to happen on a Friday, Alex gets this email from nowhere from PayPal. No warning, no explanation of what this is all about, no indication of what you can do to fix any problem. And you're absolutely right. If this is a bank, I mean, absolutely terrible. And getting your money out apparently is a struggle. I gather Alex managed it, but there shouldn't even be a question because it's your money. It's not theirs. So what is this nonsense about, you know, they close your account, they hold your money, and then they wait and decide 3 months later whether to give it back to you? I mean, that's almost implying that it's not your money, that you come about it in some illicit way, which is, I think, absolutely, frankly, outrageous. But that's what was done to us on Friday. We've managed to hold on to our money. For us ourselves, it's not as big a blow as it could be, as it's been for some other people. But it's still outrageous, and I'm absolutely seething about it.
Yeah, and the interesting part is that it was we finished a live stream. Yeah. Like a 2-hour live stream. Yeah. And right when I was done with the live, when I closed up the live stream and everything, and the first thing I do is I usually just check my messages. And literally like a minute after I turned on my messages on my email, boom, the PayPal thing comes. And the first thing I did was to get the money out. We didn't have much, to be honest. And but I was like, okay, whatever's there, let me get it out right away. I got it out right away. Then I started to message Alexander and talk about it. But then literally 10 minutes afterwards, after I message Alexander, I get one that says my own personal PayPal, which has nothing to do with the company. I use it to pay.
Right. That's really interesting to me, because this is the whole, this is the point I make with my account, is that this was a donation only platform. We weren't selling product. I mean, it's the only way it's even linked to T-Lab is simply because it's T-Lab and that's my name on there. The people are sending donations and that's the only thing that happens. And yet they argue there's some kind of a violation there. So you're saying, first of all, my question, I guess, is what was their stated reason for doing so? And then explain for me how, I mean, the process that they could actually go after your personal account as if that somehow ties to the same thing. What are your thoughts?
We don't know.
We don't know. I mean, the only thing they said to us is that they've sort of checked us out and they don't like our activities. That's the word they use, activities.
Right.
What activities? what are these activities that we are engaging in, which in any way, violate their rules? And they refer to a user agreement. Well, I've checked the user agreement. There's absolutely nothing in the user agreement which says that we've done anything there that we, you know, would justify them cancelling us in the way that they did do. Mm-hmm. And of course, going after our personal accounts is absolutely outrageous. No explanation for this. By the way, the email we got, I got the same email as Alex about my personal account, unsigned. No indication who'd written it, no identification of any person, no telephone number you can contact. I mean, the only thing you could do, I suppose, is write back, reply to that email. But, you know, that will just go down, as we know, into a black hole. I mean, to be straightforward about it, I feel I'm not dealing with a payment facilitator, which is what I thought PayPal was, a kind of quasi bank. It feels more like I'm dealing with an enforcer. That is some kind of protection racket that, you know, you do what we like or else we will, you know, cut you off, seize your money and goodbye. And if you don't like it, well, you can write to us, you can complain about it, but we're not even going to respond.
So I actually called them. I called the customer service. And you want to know what the response I got was? I got a message which said, we cannot handle calls at this moment due to COVID restrictions.
Yeah.
That's literally the message I got due to COVID.
I mean, that right now, that it just on a side note is such an infuriating thing right now. I mean, I'm dealing with people in regard to like online stuff. There's not even like a real world example. It's a business that operates entirely online and they're arguing COVID restrictions. So there's delays in the emails and processing of electronic transfers. It's just so frustrating how that's a blanket statement right now for pretty much everything. And I guarantee it just covers incompetence, in my opinion.
I mean, we actually went through afterwards the next day and saw some other cases where PayPal did the same thing. And I saw Rebel News' his case. And Rebel News actually posted the email they got. It was the same exact email that I got, Alexander got, and the company. The same exact one. Just a standard form, word for word.
Word for word. It was just...
On a Friday. The Rebel News got theirs on a Friday night. We got ours on a... Literally, I believe Rebel News' personal accounts, copy-paste.
Absolutely.
Right. It's incredible. Here's actually what I have. Let me know if this is the same thing that you're seeing on your actual back end. Because this is what I found so interesting. And then I have some questions about the users in regard to how it's affecting them. As you can see, it just says after review, we've decided. Yep. Well, first one, it says some of your products and services. Right. And this is what I think is so telling. And this is why I think they do these limited suspensions instead of actually removing you, because it's a legal gray area they create where they can come back and be like, oh, well, we didn't technically remove them, so we can always give it back to them, right? Is that products and services, which I'm sure is the same for you. We're not selling something, right? There's no service being created other than just the platform being used. But then it falls up and says, after review, we've decided to, again, permanently limit. And so for me, everybody who's currently still using PayPal, who I guess has missed it on my show or didn't realize it happened, they're not being told that this has been banned. They're getting weird emails that say, are you sure your information's correct? Or, you know, and so this is, I mean, it's such a cowardly act to do this and then put it on the user and create this weird dilemma for them. So you get users emailing us and going, hey, what are you doing wrong? What's wrong with TLAV? You know, so what are your thoughts on that? Are you seeing the same thing?
Mm-hmm. Same exact.
Exactly. Because I mean, permanently limit doesn't necessarily mean that the account's closed.
Right.
It just means it's not functioning. So for all somebody knows, and, you know, this is something I'm actually, inquiring about, because there's one particular company that does from time to time send me some money. I'm not sure they have any idea from, PayPal that they're not supposed to send money to me.
No, they
that
don't.
Way.
So they don't.
For all, so you know that money is just going down a black hole. It's just vanishing. It's going straight into the PayPal system, and it seems to me exactly what they're doing.
No, I think it bounces. I mean, I'm getting responses from people that are trying to donate. There's some people who. I mean, we tried to make as many announcements as we could and inform people. But just today, actually, I got some person that wanted to donate like $5, and I just got a message which said, "This person's name, blah blah blah." Is unable to donate the $5 to you. A standard form letter from PayPal. And that was it. And that's what I got from there. But to be just on a side note, one interesting thing, which I think is something that we could, that we are going to explore, is the fact that they don't let you close your account either.
Interesting.
Now, one of the things that I did after all of this, after I called them, I said, you know what? If they don't want to do business with me, that's fine. No problem. As Alex, personal. If they don't want to do business with me, no problem. I'm just going to close my account. I don't want my name on there. I don't want my telephone number, my address, my cards. I'm just going to close it like I close a social media account or anything else. I go to close it. It doesn't let you. I go to close a company. It doesn't let you. Now, according to EU GDPR policy, they can't do this.
No.
Right. And you know, this is really telling because I'm sure you've seen the same thing. There's a point where they actually argue, and this seems like you guys kind of sidestep. I was actually able to get some of the funds out as well, but there was funds that were seized in my account. So I don't know if you had a similar scenario, but they made the argument or the claim that said that we'll figure it out. We're going to seize the funds, and over 180 days, we're going to decide whether we have to pay out people for your discrepancies, like as if we did something, or even pay ourselves for the process. That's what they said. And they even argued that we still have a direct connection to your bank account, which you can't remove. So, and I've heard verified from two different people that they will go into your bank account and seize funds if they feel they're owed that money. So that is, I think, exactly why they're keeping it open and not allowing you to close it, because that, I think, would remove that connection. So, I mean, this is criminal activity here, guys. I mean, this is so far outside the realm. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And, you know, one does ask the question, has anybody tried to bring legal action about this? Because, frankly, this is so off the scale. I mean, saying, you know, we're going to hold on to your money for 180 days and then decide whether or not we should keep it or what part of it to give to you. What grounds do they have to do that? What possible rights do they have to confiscate other people's money? None. I mean, absolutely. And they're not a law enforcement agency. They've got no court orders behind them that entitle them to do this. They've not taken you to court. They've not been tipped off, as far as we know, by any police agency. And they're not acting for a police agency. So what basis, what legal authority do they have to do this thing? As far as I can see, none. And yet they are doing it. And when you said criminal activity, I think it is criminal activity. I think if it's publicized to other people, which it can easily be, it could be defamatory as well, by the way, because, you know, activities, you know, things with your goods and services, which we are questioning. Well, in what respect? How? In what way? What is being implied there? Is it being implied that we're doing something illicit, that we're doing something wrong? All we're trying to do is operate a perfectly legal, bona fide, open, transparent business. It's a business in which we express opinions, which it is our right to do. It's, you know, in the United States, it's protected under the First Amendment to express opinions. And, you know, our opinions are not just marginal opinions. They're opinions that many, many people hold and which many, many people want to hear. And they're perfectly legal. We do nothing in any way that breaks or transgresses any law. So upon what right, upon what legal basis, upon what ground do they do this thing?
Right. I think defamation is a really important point, because that's something that's being dismissed because people would argue that, you know, you got what you deserved. And that's kind of like the political mindset. But in a real world legal context, what you're describing, I mean, even the idea of saying that you're spreading conspiracy theories, like they're and we all see how that affects in the real world today. People are losing jobs. People are, you know, getting, I mean, so that I argue that there's a legal standing there outside of the PayPal. You know, like a class action lawsuit against PayPal, you could actually argue that what they're doing there by publicizing it, because they are, because I've seen things on responses to tweets where they say things like this. And it's interesting that would argue that, I mean, what do you think about that? You feel like there's actually a legal standing right there? You probably have a better opinion than I do.
I think there is, because can I just say straight away? I mean, I think this whole argument, you know, that this is all we're going to hear, a conspiracy site and all that kind of thing, is absolute nonsense. I mean, at the end of the day, people, you know, can have views. They may not be entirely, you know, they may not be views that all of us share. But, you know, one person's conspiracy theory is another person's truth. Conspiracies happen in the real world. People have opinions about them. People are allowed to express them. And anyway, this notion of a conspiracy theory is simply, in my opinion, a label some people attach to whatever opinion they don't like. As far as I am concerned, when somebody comes along and says, look, we're going to close our business connection with you because we don't like your opinions, well, that's one thing. I mean, I may not be very unhappy about it, but that's, you know, an entirely, well, that's a decision they can make. They're not obliged to conduct business with you. But when they seize your money, when they start spreading stories that it's about your activities or your business or your sort of connections, or, you know, that implies that there is something illicit about what you're doing. And something illicit, to my mind, comes very, very close to saying that, you know, what you're doing is something that is either illegal or borderline illegal, or, you know, immoral in some way. And for that reason, they're denying you these services and holding on to your money. And if they're holding on to your money, of course, they're also implying that in some way that money isn't yours. So, I mean, the whole thing is just outrageous. There's no basis for this. Nothing that any one of us has done justifies this sort of conduct. And I mean, to be straightforward about it, it should be stopped.
Well, this brings me to a point that I think is very relevant in regard to just where it's obviously ties to COVID-19 in my mind with a lot of the stuff going on politically there. But we've seen the domestic terrorism push come out lately with the white supremacy, January 6th, all this being discussed. Mm-hmm. And you've probably seen the domestic terrorism executive order that was put out in regard, or domestic terrorism. And this is very telling for me because it literally mentions the spreading of conspiracy theories. It mentions the challenging of the narrative around COVID-19. So do you think that this plays a factor into why these platforms are deciding to say, remove you because of the content or rather the activities you're producing? And do you think that ties directly back to whether this is just the first step in laying the groundwork for what we're doing as actually being illegal?
Yes. Well, it must be, because what else are we doing other than providing opinion and content? I mean, it's the only conceivable reason that PayPal would have. They're trying to punish us for expressing our views, engaging in our analysis, stating our opinion, and trying to build a business in that kind of way, which is, of course, no different from what, you know, any kind of media organization ever does.
Well, I mean, we don't really report much on, at least on the video side of things. No. We don't do much COVID coverage at all. And when we do COVID coverage, it's always in the context of geopolitics. Yeah. We never try to delve into the science of it. No. And we're very careful. And there's so much other news going on that, you know, okay, we understand that COVID is a taboo subject. And we don't cover it as much as we probably would like as well. But either way, I think they got us because of our Afghanistan coverage.
Yeah.
That's where I think they got us. And it's interesting that just the other day, they Facebook and Instagram deplatformed and banned one of the grieving mothers.
I saw that. Yeah. I saw that. I can't believe
they
that.
They came out with an apology. But anyone that's critical of this Democrat, for lack of a better word, Democrat, I mean, this swamp, deep state machine. Anyone that's critical of it in any way whatsoever is, as you said, going to be labeled some sort of domestic terrorist. And that includes people on the left, on the right, and in the center.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the interesting part about that, though, is I see it as not so much like this COVID topic and Afghanistan topic. I mean, right now, I think it's an easy argument to make that a lot of this stuff is tied up in a larger push geopolitically, you know, whether we're talking about foreign policy or domestic, you know. And so I think Afghanistan's clearly a very, very contentious topic right now. And so and I love that crossover there in a terrible way about what happened to that mother, because it shows you that this is not just about COVID-19 and health policy. I mean, they're applying the same logic now to foreign policy, and that's where it's going to go. You know, it's the same with the you know, mandates that they're implying that are applying that going forward, they just become usual now, whether or not we've ever decided that that's acceptable, you know, and it's the same kind of thing going forward. So you do definitely think it was about the Afghanistan coverage. I'm curious to think.
We don't know, but that's what I believe. I believe we did a week of good Afghanistan coverage, and that's where I believe they got us. I could be wrong, though, but that's what I think, because we're just not that big on COVID coverage.
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, that was really what it must have been about. But of course, we did say a couple of things about, you know, the president and some of the speeches that he's made. And we were very critical of those speeches, and we unpacked them, and we pointed out all sorts of things about
cover it. You're not going to cover it? I mean, what do they want us to do anymore? Not cover? I mean, literally, we tiptoe around every word. We say "coof." We have words for ISIS. We have words for Al-Qaeda. We have words for COVID. Yeah. What do you want us to do anymore? I mean, not cover Afghanistan, not cover COVID, not cover passport mandates. What do you want us to cover?
That's what they want.
Well, Well, they don't want us to cover anything. I mean, that's exactly. That's the obvious, yeah. That's the clear agenda. They want to control the media space and to restrict it to a few favored parties, which are those that, you know, are friendly to the president and his party, for want of a better word, and the kind of establishment and the whole structure of power in Washington. And of course, if you go back, and you know, we're talking about the United States because this is an American company. This is such a complete violation of the fundamental principles upon which the United States was founded. Now, I speak as somebody, I'm the one person who's got no connection with the United States. I live in Britain, I come from Greece, I've traveled to New York, I knew New York quite well, but I don't know. I haven't been much to the United States, but I'd always assumed that in the United States, you could run your business unhindered, you could express your opinions freely, you're protected by the Constitution, you're protected by the rule of law, and it's a shattering discovery to me to discover otherwise, but there it is.
I think a lot of Americans wrongly assumed that as well, and I think we're finding that out today, that maybe that's never really been the exact situation, you know, and I think what is an interesting discussion here to have, which I think has been talked about a lot even before this, is even, you know, where we are currently in the world, is whether a private company has the right to do this, and then at what point that company is no longer considered a private company when they have obvious connections to a government, right? So what are your thoughts on that little problem?
Well, I mean, I we've discussed this many times, actually, between ourselves, but I don't think you can call PayPal acting in this way as simply a private company. Right. Certainly, first of all, can I just say straight away, as far as I'm concerned, a private company doesn't have the right to do this. I mean, they don't have the right to seize people's money. They don't have the right to spread stories about people, which is in effect what they're doing. They don't have that right at all. And I mean, you talked about, you know, the criminal law. I've talked about defamation. Alex has talked about European law. There's so many legal issues here about a private company behaving this way. As I said, it's absolutely rogue. But the problem is they are not rogue. They are actually acting as a handmaiden to power. They are a facilitator to a part of the government of the United States that has a particular set of agendas and priorities and doesn't want itself to be challenged or discussed or held to account in the public space. And that's what they are. So it's not really a private company anymore. It is an enforcement arm of a wing, if you like, of the US government. And I think we should be straightforward about that, certainly between ourselves. And I think more and more people in the United States and elsewhere will come to see it for what it really is, because it's not, no private company behaves like this, and no private company would feel that sense of impunity, which PayPal obviously has, which makes them feel that they can behave like this.
Absolutely. Any thoughts on that, Alex?
Well, I mean, what does PayPal have to do with a content creator? I mean, PayPal should be acting as a payment processor.
Yeah.
We're creating content. We're selling t-shirts. That should be the extent of it. Now, if they want to review our account because they feel that maybe we're not selling enough for their platform, I can understand that. If they want to review our account because we've had too many disputes with some of the payments or the donations made.
Right.
I can see that. Too many chargebacks. I can definitely see that. Outside of that, What do they care? Why should they even involve themselves in removing accounts because of the content someone create, as long as it doesn't go against their terms? And their terms specifically say that the typical no adult, no violence, fine. We don't do any of that.
Any of that, no.
Right.
Well, there's no reason.
No. Yeah, I think that's the problem, too, just like with Patreon, is they're arguing that they somehow, like your point is, you know, if you are violating something on your terms of service on that platform, then you could argue that there is a, you know, they might have a right to do that. But we're talking about content outside their platform. Yeah. They're making a subjective opinion, as you guys know, to remove you from their platform based on something you're doing over there. And that just adds to the illegality of it all. But the point about their right to do so, I think, is really interesting, as you were saying, Alex, is that they clearly feel that they're okay to do this, you know? And so it shows you that I, my opinion, that they probably have crossed their T's and dotted their I's and made sure with some level that they're, you know, is this okay to do? If they didn't have that nod, I don't think they would take such a flagrantly illegal action. You know,
Where does this go if you go down this road?
Yeah, I know. Well, where does it go? But can I just say, I think you're absolutely right. I cannot imagine a private company, just an ordinary private company, behaving in this way on such a scale, doing this to so many people, if they hadn't some, you know, real belief, some real grounds for belief that if they did it, they'd be okay doing it. Because, I mean, you touched on issues of law. You spoke about criminal law. I mean, you know, some companies would be very, very, well, any other company which didn't feel it had that kind of protection wouldn't dare to do these things. I mean, they absolutely wouldn't. I mean, it's inconceivable that they would. So if PayPal feels that it can, it clearly feels that it has the backing of somebody with power in the US government. I mean, it's the only conceivable way that they could operate like this.
I agree. And for what Alex was saying there, what's next is obviously an important question here, because this is the first step, at least in regard to this PayPal and the big push that's happening. So, you know, what's next? They're going to start taking down your bank accounts. And we've already seen that in regard to Wells Fargo with that politician. You know, we've seen these things begin to happen.
Michael Flynn just had it happen to him with his cards.
Right. Right.
You know, this is taken away by Chase Bank.
It's the beginning of social credit. I mean, we've already seen, I don't know if you guys have talked about we're seeing the passport discussion, but we've already seen the beginning stages of the vaccine passport infrastructure requiring Expedion to enter it, you know, and this is all being set up this way. So I feel like there's an obvious crossover here in regard to the cover up of information. Or let me ask you to put it this way. Do you guys see an overlap with what's happening here? Not to compare ourselves with this person even remotely, but with what's happening with like a Julian Assange situation, how there's obviously a legal ground that's being ignored. Right. So do you see any overlap?
Well, first of all, I mean, obviously, we're not in the same situation as he is. And he's gone far further. I mean, he's a huge figure who's exposed extraordinary things. We are commentators. We comment on news. We don't deal with, you know, leaks of classified information. But of course, there is a continuum. I mean, there's no doubt about this. And that is affecting all of us on this show. But the fact is, we are saying and revealing and discussing and talking about things that those in power don't want us to talk about. And why is Julian Assange in prison in Belmarsh in Britain? And why is he going through this absolutely Kafkaesque legal process in Britain? It's because he is doing the same thing. He's obviously leaking. He's also publishing leaked information. He's contact with whistleblowers. He's able to do all of those things. But ultimately, it all comes down to the fact that he is producing, publishing information. And this is all about controlling information. So if you have someone like Assange, you go after him, you use the Espionage Act. If you want to come after people like us, then you come after them by getting PayPal to close down their payment services. And, you know, who knows? As you absolutely rightly ask, what comes next? Because when you go down this particular road, when you go down this illegal road, there is no real stop. There's no end to it, because that's a thing to always understand. If you're starting to break the law, which is what's happening, then you can't stop, because if you stop, you risk at some point being held to account for what you've done. So that obliges you, in a way, to continue along the process that you started off with. And, you know, I used to have to deal. I mean, I used to work with lawyers who were, you know, involving criminal clients and criminals. And I can tell you that's exactly what used to happen with them. Once you start down a criminal path, it's almost impossible to actually just give up on it. Unless, of course, you want to go up and go to the police or the authorities and make a confession and start from a clean slate and accept whatever punishment you merit. But, of course, these people, the people we've just been talking about, are certainly in no mood to accept any kind of punishment or do anything like that.
Yeah, that's very clear. Any thoughts on how, you know, in your sphere in regard, I mean, you mentioned already that the amount wasn't that much. It didn't really affect you that much, but will this affect you going forward? Like in regard to using PayPal, or is there any effect in general for your
minor
platform that you're doing?
Minor. minor effect on the business side of things, our platform side of things. The PayPal thing was an inconvenience. We had to do some things with our website too, because we were we felt that we were a little bit exposed on our openness, on our desire to be open. And one of the things that we did is we decided to close things down a little bit, not actually shut down our platforms, but to just make them members only or redirect them to locals and stuff like that. Because one thing that we realized is that you can't be open in today's world. You definitely have to try and be anonymous. And that's a shame, because we've done our best to be who we are. Mm-hmm. You know, we give our real names, we say where we're located. You know, the company, we have our company can be researched by anybody. We don't hide anything, right? And we don't want to hide. Right. We're giving people the news, and we want people to know us. We let them into our living room just as much as they let us into their living room. Yeah. And that's how we want it to be. Yeah. But one thing we're realizing is that the minute they go after your business and your personal, it means that they're making it personal.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show that you're not going to be able in the future to be who you say you are. You're going to have to go underground. I'm giving my QR code when I go into restaurants or bars, and I don't know where it goes.
No.
I go and I get my test, my PCR test, and I can go to the cafes and the God knows what here. Fine. Okay. I'll play this theater. I'll play this dance. But this information that I've got on this QR code, where's it going? Who's getting it?
No. Yeah. I mean, the anonymity, I think, is a huge factor of what they're trying to remove. And so you're absolutely right. You know, that's every action that's being taken. And by the way, as you probably have seen, it's not even secret. I mean, they're openly discussing how anonymity, whether it's around cryptocurrency or anything, is the problem, even though we can point to the outrageous criminal activity that's currently utilizing the fiat dollar. You know, it just doesn't even matter. But I think you're right. I think that's where the last point, I think it's important that we continue to be open. Like, I love that you do that in the same way, right? We don't need to hide what we're doing. We're not breaking the law, but simultaneously utilizing the anonymity where we can to go forward. I'm with you 100% on that. Go ahead, Alex.
Absolutely. Well, just wanted to make a point, which is, of course, that PayPal and what they've just done are using anonymity. That email we got was unsigned. There's no name there. There's no explanation of who's actually said. It just says PayPal, whatever that means. So they use anonymity. They may say it's a problem. Anonymity is a problem, but it's not a problem for them. It's a problem for everyone else. That's what they see. That's what they want to try and see. They're happy to use anonymity, but they want to deny it to other people. Now, I personally have no problem with anonymity. I don't think you should judge people on anonymity. I think you should judge people on the content and the value of the service and information they provide. And that's all there really is to say. If people are hiding behind anonymity to carry out criminal acts, well, that's another thing. But if they are using it anonymity because they want to spare themselves for, well, whatever reason they want, then they should be entitled to do that. But as I said, if anonymity is such a big issue, then all I could say is PayPal themselves should start to act as they preach, because we didn't get any name from anybody in PayPal who was responsible for doing this thing to us.
The interesting argument about that is that we can, the anonymity part of it, it's always, that's the argument they use there, where it's saying, well, people use this to commit crimes, therefore nobody can be anonymous. And that is ridiculous. I mean, this is the same thing we're seeing with the Constitution in every possible way, that, well, yes, you have the right to so-and-so, but because of this dangerous thing, that no longer applies. And we all know that's not how that works. Shall not be infringed, nailing the rights from a U.S. perspective, you know? So I find that very interesting. And that is the scapegoat that's being used, you know?
And now when you enter any type of establishment, the plan is that they're going to QR code you so they know what establishment you've entered. So you're going to leave your home. You're going to call an Uber. They've got you there. You're going to send your messages via WhatsApp. They've got you there. And then when you enter the establishment, they're going to get you there. So they're going to know at every moment in time exactly where you are. And of course, cash is gone. They don't want you to pay with cash anymore. Mm-hmm. The country that I'm in right now, Greece, I never thought I would live to see the day when the Greeks stopped using cash. Because of COVID, they're now using their card everywhere. No one touches cash. Why? Because if you touch the cash, well, it's going to have the bug on it, and then, you know, well, you can't have that.
And it's interesting how much that leans into added to the growing list of things that people have been pointing to for years and decades and saying there's something they're trying to accomplish, you know? And so it's really unnerving to see so many of those things, whether that was ultimately a plan that led to now or just as a coincidence and they're using the situation, but that they're all coming to fruition. A lot of these very valid concepts like a cashless society or the vaccine passport, you know, I pointed to the European roadmap that planned this since 2018, where they slotted it between 20 and 21, you know, and is it coincidence that it's happening exactly in line with that or not? I mean, it's hard to say, but they're valid things. And those are the kind of conversations they don't want people to have, honest dialogue about possibilities, you know?
Of course they don't. And absolutely. And can I just say, coming back to your earlier point, I mean, saying that, you know, people who are, you know, not prepared to give their names may be engaging in crimes is just a step from saying that, you know, not giving your name means you are engaging in a crime and therefore you are committing a crime. I mean, that's the kind of logic that you're going to start to follow if you take that kind of approach. A crime is something people commit. Not wanting to give their name out is a private matter. That's part of your right. Your name is part of your personal identity. It's part of yourself. You can give it or you don't give it. That should be your right to do. You commit a crime, that's an entirely different matter. But forcing people to give their names is, frankly, a very sinister thing. And we should be under no doubt about that. It is a massive invasion of privacy. And by the way, the European Union pretends that it is defending privacy, which is a human right. Well, we know what that really means.
Yeah. I think the name part's really telling as well, because at least in the United States, a lot of Americans, and most states, I would argue, are completely unaware that they're not required to give their identification when asked for it, you know, just for no logical reason, you know, and that it's a lack of understanding of rights. And that's both U.S. and just international. You know, there's a lot of international, straight from the United Nations kind of discussions or documentation that show that a lot of what's happening today is flagrantly against international law and human rights, you know, but this is the point. Like I've been using this term since before this all started, even from foreign policy, but we've been seeing this escalate. It's rampant lawlessness. I mean, it's snowballing.
It's rampant lawlessness. And can I just say, and it's a point which, you know, we recently discussed in the program we did with Robert Barnes. I asked this question: what is the legal basis for many of the things that are being done? And Robert, who is a lawyer, said there isn't any. So, I mean, there's been no laws, no acts of parliament, no acts of Congress, no nothing that originates from any parliament that I'm aware of in any country that authorised some of these things that are being done at the moment. And of course, that's a fundamental point, because when you are acting outside the law, not only are you living in a lawless state in exactly the way that you said, but of course, you're also living in a completely arbitrary and unaccountable one, because the very nature of law is that it places limits both on its creators and its enforcers. And if there is no law, then those limits disappear and they're able to do whatever they want.
Well said. Absolutely. Well, I think the last question I have in general in regard to this specific topic would be, you know, why do you feel this is being done in a broad sense? You know, we all have our opinions, right? And I think, you know, I've expressed mine, but what do you guys feel that, you know, why it's being done to you specifically, other, you know, not the Afghanistan part, but like a long-term thing? And why do you think it's being done to a lot of independent creators? What do you think their logic is here, or their end game?
Well, I think that they don't want independent creators is the short answer. I think the whole idea that they have at the moment is that they want to have essentially official journalists who they control, who can be relied upon to turn up to press conferences and ask the right questions, and who will turn up and, you know, interview the president of the United States and give him softball questions too. There's been a very sinister court case in Britain involving Craig Murray, a person I'm sure a lot of people who watch us know who he is. I should say, by the way, just to give a, just to declare my own interest, he's a personal friend of mine. But there was an extraordinary case in which he's been sent to prison for reporting about a court case. And over the course of the judgment that was delivered against him, the judge said, well, there's real media, which is mainstream, the mainstream press, which is the real media, which is regulated and controlled. And then there are other people who are not really media at all. And, you know, they are not subject to the same controls, and therefore they're not subject to the same rules. So already you can see a high court judge in Britain is trying to create a hierarchy between protected mainstream media, however that's defined. I'm not sure how that's going to be defined, but we all know who we're talking about, BBC, CNN, those sort of people, and everyone else who tries to set up their own independent channel, do their own reporting, engage people, do the sort of things which are in effect in the United States, specifically protected under the Constitution. And what we're seeing is a covert attempt to abolish that and to use private companies like PayPal to achieve it, so that the government itself can say, well, you know, we're not breaching the First Amendment because we're not doing it ourselves.
Hmm. Alex, you have thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everything that Alexander said, plus I believe there's money in it for Silicon Valley and big tech. Right. And, you know, like when you look at companies like Facebook and Twitter, it's not that hard to create the technology of a Facebook or a Twitter. It really isn't. They're not really doing anything. And, you know, on a programming level, it's pretty easy to replicate it. So for them, if they can add more regulation, more legal obstacles, more requirements for businesses to get your identity, to have KYC added into it, to have face recognition added into it, to have to check your identifications when you sign up. If they add all these complexities, plus making it so that if you do decide to create a social network, then you have to have people in place to actually monitor the posts and go through everything. Otherwise, you're going to face legal implications there. Well, who's going to create a social network? Who's going to be the competition for these guys? No one. I mean, we're seeing them go after Gab, for example. The Congress sent Gab a letter because of the January 6th stuff. And when I looked at the letter that they sent Gab asking them for information, I mean, the list was absolutely ridiculous. Mm. I mean, ridiculous. They're going to need a team of lawyers to go through everything and get all the bits of information. And the first thing I said to myself is, well, they're just looking to kill the competition, aren't they?
Right.
Yeah. Kind of like how what they did to Parler. Yeah. Parler was a different way that they did it. They did that in a cartel format.
Yeah.
You know, Jack Dorsey calls up Bezos and says, Bezos, can you, you know, get them off of Amazon? Sure, no problem. They call up Google. They say, get them off the app stores. There you go. Parler was killing Twitter, but mm-hmm. they got rid of them. Instagram was killing Facebook. A lot of people forget Instagram was going to destroy Facebook. It was literally going to destroy Facebook. And then they concocted this story that Mark Zuckerberg saw what a cool app Instagram was. And he called the founder and they had this great meal at Mark Zuckerberg's house. And they decided to sell the company for $1 billion to Zuckerberg. Horseshit. Horseshit. I think they put the name. I think the people in power told the guys at Instagram, look, we've invested a lot in Facebook. And this is just my opinion. I'm embellishing it. But I think they said, look, we invested a lot in Facebook. We're getting people's real names. Remember, before Facebook, it was MySpace and the other companies, and they weren't asking for real names. Mm-hmm. Facebook came along and said, we want your real name. We want your real school. We want your real information. That's what Facebook's about. It's about being the real person. And mm-hmm. people laid it up. And I think they told Instagram, we put too much effort into Facebook. You're going to go with them. Stop this, and you're going to continue as part of Facebook. But I think there's money for them, and I think they want to control their monopoly. Companies mm-hmm. like YouTube, I think, may be a little different because there are a lot of barriers to entry to serve up video. I think YouTube wants to become kind of like a Netflix. So they're going to go along with the game. I think they want to move more towards, let's get rid of mm-hmm. all these content creators mm-hmm. and just try to offer like maybe 10,000 channels, which are premium. So I think YouTube may just be playing along with this because it serves their business interest.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, that's what you already see happening. You know, they've already brought the mainstream media is all in there trying to get their own channels going. It's going to be, you know, transition away from this and act like it's still an organic platform that brings information. You know, that's the idea.
And they get recommended. The mainstream media just get I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, not right now. I mean, that's the crazy part. People are, I mean, hopefully everybody can see. It's willful ignorance to not, but Google searches and these different things. I mean, it's flagrant today. I keep showing that versus if you just do like a custom search pre-2019 for anything even reasonably health related versus now, it's just ridiculous. I mean, you get specific results versus today. It's just like everything that's like, oh, maybe he's asking this because he's undermining the vaccine, so we're going to give this, you know. And it's very clear choices being made there. But the part about the judge, and even coming from the constitutional the U.S. Constitution, that's what's really crazy to me, is we are getting to a point to where the actions they're taking from a judicial point, I mean, it is, specifically speaking from the U.S. stance, it is directly undermining the sole purpose of the job, to uphold the Constitution. You know, and so if they're making these subjective decisions, like removing the custody of the time she was allowed to see the child in that court case. I don't know if you saw that, but the judge ruled that, oh, well, you haven't had your vaccine. Well, you can't see the child until you do, based on nobody bringing it up. It just shows you that they have gone way off the rails in regard to what they want, what they feel is right. And it's not even law guiding this stuff. So rampant lawlessness, I think, is the term of the year and a half, 8 months, or a year where we're going today. So at the end of the day here, guys, I thank you for being here and continuing to do what you're doing, the amazing work that you're doing, and continuing to push back against it and not be scared away by the censorship, pushing back instead. You know, that's what I respect so much about it. So any other thoughts you have on this to wrap up about PayPal, about where it's going, you know, either one of you?
Well, we're going to go on pushing and fighting and getting our content out, because we are absolutely committed to doing that, just as you are. And we have no intention of just giving up simply because PayPal does these sort of things to us. And, you know, Alex said that, you know, we took this blow and it wasn't a particularly bad thing for us. Well, it wasn't a bad thing for us. For other people, it's crippling. We are incredibly sorry to you. For you, if it's been done to you, to, you know, other people, and, you know, you have all our support, and we all have to work together to fight this back on this thing, and we will push back, and I'm sure in the end that it will all, you know, we will win, but, you know, we have a big battle ahead.
Yeah, these companies won't survive, and I'll go back to the MySpace story. There was a point in time when MySpace was the number one website in the United States and a top five website around the world. I mean, it happens all the time. Yahoo used to be the most popular website. It happens all the time. And people always tell me, oh, no, there's no way that that Google's not going to be the most popular, Facebook. And I always tell them, yes, there will be. There will come a day when these companies will not be around any longer. And I just think that the PayPals and the Facebooks, they're speeding that up.
Absolutely.
They're just speeding that up. And their day will come when, you know, the new technology will come. It won't be another Facebook or another Google. It never is. It's going to be a paradigm shift. Just like we go from the web to mobile, or from having stuff on your desktop to cloud. It'll be a shift. And when that shift happens, people are going to go elsewhere. And you know what they're going to say? Not only am I going to go elsewhere, they're going to say, screw you, PayPal. I don't need you. And I think that's going to happen with, my personal thought is that's going to happen with blockchain, where people are going to say, you know what, PayPal? Yeah, you're offering blockchain, you're offering crypto, but why would I go with you?
Exactly.
When I couldn't trust you for cash, why would I go with you for this?
Right. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think my concern would be the co-opting of that transition. You know what I mean? Like, take, because this is obviously where we've seen these go. And I mean, I would even question MySpace to Facebook and whether that was something that was coordinated to a degree. That's just my thought. Yeah. But today, I think it's very obvious that there's an effort to maintain the continuity of the Twitter, Instagram, like, the, you know, they've got a pretty good handle on these platforms and how they're at least influenced by the government right now. So I'm concerned about a transition there that leads into exactly where we would want to go. So my argument to wrap up here would be exactly what you're saying, but do so in a way, you know, do your due diligence out there and make sure that you're not just jumping into the next big thing, but that we're going in a direction that suits what we want, the anonymity, you know, the things we just talked about, and strive for that. You know, in fact, even do go out of your way, people that have the wherewithal, the ability to make that happen outside of the current system. You know, that's what we need to be doing. So thank you so much for being here today, guys. I really love your work, and please keep it up. So, go ahead.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you on. I really appreciate you guys' work, and I'm sure we can connect again going forward. So out there, as always, everybody, question everything, come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.